I am weary of the game, yet I don't know how I could live out of it. I don't love slight, neglect, contempt, disgrace, nor insult more than others.
Mr. President, starring Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Edward Arnold. Mr. President, at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who have lived in the White House. Dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
We'll bring you Edward Arnold as Mr. President in just a moment. But first, let's take a look at the men who have lived at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., one of the most famous residences in the world. The men who live there are tenants with a four-year lease, our presidents. A national election held once every 4 years makes a man a president. But what makes a president a man? Well, it's the little things he brings to his job. His habits, opinions, hobbies, his moods across the breakfast table. There's a human side to the highest office in the land. And you'll find it in the story of Woodrow Wilson's old-fashioned typewriter and Teddy Roosevelt's Indian clubs. This sort of personal history reveals the man, and that's what our Mr. President series tries to present. And now, another chapter in little-known White House history. Today's story of Mr. President.
That happened to the president a few years ago. Listen closely and see if you can tell who the president was. It was almost time for the president to leave for his cabinet meeting, but he sat slumped in a chair without moving. His wife watched him anxiously.
Dear, you really must go. You'll be late.
Yes, yes, I suppose you're right.
Is something wrong?
Not something, my dear. Everything.
Well, now, don't be discouraged. You'll get things straightened out.
Every place I look is trouble. Trouble here at the Capitol, trouble in the surrounding states, trouble with the cabinet, trouble abroad.
Has anything new happened with the cabinet?
No, but it's certainly obvious that most of them have no use for me or my policies.
Then why don't you discharge them and appoint a new cabinet?
My dear, the former president found them good men. I'm sure the country as a whole would feel that I had no right to dismiss them. And perhaps I am the one at fault.
You're not at fault. The trouble with your cabinet is that instead of taking their instructions from you, they're taking them from someone else, and you know who as well as I.
I know, but I don't know what to do about it.
Well, surely a president has a right to a cabinet he can work with.
My dear, sometimes I think a president has no rights. And on top of everything else, the situation abroad has me nearly crazy. Neither France nor England has any respect for this country. Look at this last episode. France insists that we recall our representative. And then when we do recall him and send another man, they refuse to let him stay on French soil. They're going out of their way to be insulting.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
I don't know. I suggested to the cabinet that we appoint 3 envoys to investigate the problem with France. But Walcott, the Secretary of the Treasury, seemed to feel that that would mean a complete break in the cabinet.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know seems to be the only answer I can make to any question lately. Well, I guess I'd better get to that cabinet meeting.
Will you be home afterwards?
No. Afterwards, I think I'll see what happens when you beard a lion in his den. Mr. Hamilton?
Well, this is a surprise, Mr. President. Come in, sit down.
I'm not here officially, and no one knows I've come.
I've been expecting to hear from you.
Oh, have you?
It was inevitable. However, it didn't occur to me that you would come to me.
I haven't come to you, Mr. Hamilton, not in the way you imply. I came because I wanted to find out if there was any possibility of peace between us.
There must be peace, Mr. President. I am head of your party. There must be perfect peace.
Oh, so now you've elected to call yourself head of the party.
I think you will find there is no doubt about my holding that position, Mr. President. And as head of the party, I expect to run the country.
You do?
Yes, through you.
Through me? Your impudence is astounding, sir.
This is the beginning of an era, Mr. President. An era of politics.
Politics?
Yes. In the future, political parties are going to elect the presidents in this country, and those parties are going to set the rules of the administration.
Well, Mr. Hamilton, I dare say if we are about to enter on an era of politics, the president can play them as well as anyone else. You know, we have fought on a good many issues, but never until today did I feel that you considered me a fool, Mr. Hamilton.
Why do you say that,
sir? Do you seriously think that you're going to run my administration?
Mr. President, you wanted to send 3 envoys to France. And you wanted to ask Congress to increase the size of the army and the navy. The cabinet opposed your wish. Do you still want to do it?
Yes, why?
Perhaps I can persuade the cabinet to change their minds.
Can you?
Shall I?
Yes. I should very much like to see if you can.
President, after further reflection, the cabinet is in accord with your former suggestion about sending 3 envoys to France, and recommends, too, that you ask Congress to increase the size of the army and of the navy. We also suggest that a federal property tax be imposed to pay for these increases.
President, is that you chopping wood?
Don't tell anyone.
We have plenty of wood.
I know, but I wanted to do some thinking.
Who are you mad at?
No. You could tell I was mad, huh?
Well, it doesn't take a very bright woman to look at the way you've splintered that log and know you're mad.
Oh, it's the cabinet, the cabinet. I'm determined to keep my temper with them and try to work the situation out.
I wouldn't trust Pickering, Walcott, and McHenry as far as I could throw them.
Well, they've always been known as honest men. I suppose they have a right to listen to Mr. Hamilton if they believe he's right. It angers me that they do, but at the same time, I know it's their right. And if I dismiss them, I may be starting a very dangerous precedent. Well, we'll see what happens in the next few months.
You're looking tired, dear. You're working too hard.
I am tired, but one of your dinners will do wonders for me, my dear.
These were the years we were going to sit by the fire and dream. Remember? These were the years when you were to retire. We were going to watch our children, our grandchildren, and the country grow and develop. And just look at us.
You know you're prettier today than the day I married you.
Oh, get along with you now.
Have you ever been sorry?
That I married you?
Mm-hmm.
Not 1 hour of one single day. They've been rich years.
Yes, but not in dollars.
In the things that dollars can't buy. In adventure, companionship, in love. In the things we've lost and suffered over together. In the things we've laughed over and remembered. In the dreams we've dreamed for the joy of dreaming.
You know, someday we will have that fire. We'll sit there and watch the sun go down behind the rim of the hill. And the cabinets and the troubles with France and England and politics will all be in the past. And the only things we will talk about will be the weather and the stars and each other. How does that sound to you?
Unspeakably dull.
Oh, good. This woman, is there no pleasing you?
There is, but that's not the way to do it. Come on in now. It's almost dinner time.
Do you know the word we received from France today?
No.
Well, they've declared that all Americans caught serving on British ships are to be considered pirates.
No.
Yes.
What are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to prepare for war and do everything I can to keep the peace. The first thing that has to be done is to appoint the envoys we want to send to France. Gentlemen of the cabinet, I would suggest that the envoys appointed to France be General Pinckney, John Marshall, and Elbridge Gerry.
Mr. President, Gerry's not a good party member.
Well, gentlemen, I believe that one member of the group should be appointed from the opposition.
But that's ridiculous.
Mr. President, This is an important situation that should be trusted only to loyal members of the party.
After all, we have no influence over Gary. Quite the contrary.
This situation is not the responsibility of the opposition, but of the party in power. Why, we wouldn't know where we stood for a moment with Gary.
Well, gentlemen, who would you suggest that I recommend to Congress in place of Mr. Gary?
I would suggest Francis Dana.
Ah, yes. You couldn't get a better man.
Very well, gentlemen. I shall recommend Mr. Dana.
Why did you give in on Mr. Gary, dear?
Because right now I want to do all I can to get along with the cabinet. I don't want to appear arbitrary.
Well, they certainly appear arbitrary.
Well, that's all right, as long as I don't appear that way. Besides, I had a feeling I would get my way anyhow. Francis Dana declined the appointment, and I was sure he would, so so I reappointed Gary anyhow.
You know, if I were that cabinet, I'd watch you mighty carefully from now on.
Well, they aren't watching me very closely at all. I believe they think I'm licked. They think I'm eating out of their hands.
Well, one of the best ways I can think of to lose a hand is to let you eat out of it. When does the commission sail for France?
Very shortly.
Do you think Talleyrand will receive them?
Well, he's pretty tricky. It's hard to say.
Did Congress pass the federal tax to pay for the increases in the Army and the Navy?
Yes, they did.
Wonder how the people are going to like that.
The cabinet thought it was a good idea.
I know, but what about the people?
I imagine the people will let us know how they feel about it in very short order.
Oh, dear, I wish we could go to Quincy for a few weeks. You need a rest.
Well, we'll see the commission off to France, and we'll see what develops. Maybe one of these years we will get that vacation.
Beautiful afternoon for a walk, isn't it? It's so quiet, it seems almost like Quincy. Let's pretend we're on a vacation.
All right, we're miles away from Philadelphia. And...
Mr. President.
Well, we didn't get very far with that. What's the matter? What is it?
Mr. President. Oh, thank heavens I found you. Good afternoon, Madam President.
Hello, Mr. Wilker.
What's happened?
Insurrection in Pennsylvania. Guns, regiments, John Freeze.
What?
Now, wait a minute, Walcott. Wait a minute. Slow down. Catch your breath.
A man named John Freeze is leading a rebellion against the government.
Against the government?
Well, against the new federal property tax.
Oh!
Freeze and his rebels say if any tax collectors come into Pennsylvania, they're going to shoot their legs off.
Oh,
well,
my.
Well.
Yes, but that isn't the worst that's happening, Mr. President.
No?
No. The women are in this, too.
What?
Any tax assessor who knocks on any front door in Pennsylvania is liable to get a bucket of boiling water dumped on his head by the lady of the house.
Oh, my.
Yes, they're all keeping the kettles boiling just in case. Several federal men have been treated already.
A hot water war, eh?
Oh, can you imagine? Boiling water, Mr. President. We've got to take steps immediately.
All right, I'll call a cabinet meeting.
Well, I took the liberty of calling one already, sir.
Oh, you did?
Yes, the gentlemen will be assembled by 3:00.
Very well, I'll be there. Gentlemen, I want an order sent out telling the people of Pennsylvania they must submit to the laws. And I want General McPherson and a force of cavalry and militia to proceed to Pennsylvania immediately. I want this rebellion brought to an end at once. And I want John Freeze arrested.
It's late, Mr. President.
Yes, I know.
Has something else happened?
They captured John Freeze. He's been brought here for trial.
Well, that's what you wanted.
No, but you have to have order in the land.
I know.
And yet there is sympathy in my heart for John Freeze. He's being tried for treason, but I don't believe he's a traitor. This country is going through a spell of growing pains. There's bound to be belchings and disorders if all the laws don't digest properly. It takes time.
Well, I'm sure you'll arrive at what's right to do about it.
Well, we must have order in the land. There's no question about that.
Is there any word from the commission that went to France?
Yes, a dispatch today. Talleyrand has refused to receive our envoys unless they pay heavy bribes to the French officials. He also wants America to make a large loan to France.
What are you going to do?
I've done it. I've sent a message to Congress saying the mission to France has failed. And I've asked that we speed our preparations for war. Oh, my dear, I don't want war.
I don't want war at home with the John Freezes. I don't want war abroad. That's all I see before me. It's all I see before me.
In just a moment, we'll come back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Today, there's a dangerous killer on the rampage throughout the country. The killer's name is tuberculosis, better known as TB. However, the picture is not as bleak as it looks. Although TB causes more deaths among persons between 15 and 34 than any other disease, it is steadily being eliminated by public action. Scientific knowledge of the causes of tuberculosis and its methods of prevention has now made it possible to battle this menace. The most important method of prevention is the mass chest X-ray. If individuals take the necessary steps to detect and treat this disease, TB can be wiped out. That's why those ill with TB must be found. So protect your own health, as well as your family's, by having your chest X-rayed immediately. Now, back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Have you guessed who the president was when all this happened? It really did happen, you know, a few years ago. The president sent Congress the dispatches of the envoys telling of their demands for money. The letters were published and the country's anger blazed to warlike glow. Marshall and Pinckney returned from Europe completely discouraged. Gary remained in what seemed to be a vain hope. The president, desperately desiring to keep the peace, walked the tense, worried months.
Mr. President.
Yes, Mr. Hamilton.
The Federalist Party considers war with France the only course that can be honorably followed.
I don't want war, Mr. Hamilton.
How long do you expect this country to go on taking the insults it has been taking?
I can ignore insults very easily, when I know I'm saving lives by ignoring them.
An attitude like that could lose this country for us.
Mr. Hamilton, you forget that I know something of wars myself. Our minister at The Hague, Mr. Vance Murray, is keeping me informed of events in France. And so far, they are playing just as much of a waiting game as we are. I don't think Talleyrand wants war.
Well, he's liable to have one on his hands whether he wants one or not.
Mr. Hamilton, I do not intend to be dictated to by you. You were not elected to the office of president, and you're not responsible to the people. I am. I am responsible not only for what I do, but I'm sorry to say I am responsible for what you do. There will be no war with France, Mr. Hamilton, if I can prevent it.
Mr. President, the commanding general of the army sent you my name along with Pinckney and Knox to be one of his general officers. May I ask if you have removed my name from the list?
No, I have not. I sent the list to the Senate for confirmation just as I received it from the general.
Thank you, Mr. President.
But I still say, Mr. Hamilton, there will be no war with France.
Chopping wood again. My goodness, you've practically demolished a whole tree. What on earth has the cabinet done to you today?
How did you know it was the cabinet again?
Well, I've learned to recognize the symptoms. If you don't get a change of cabinet soon, we aren't going to have a tree left on the grounds. What happened?
Well, two of my cabinet members persuaded the general to give Mr. Hamilton first place in his staff of officers. Against my recommendations.
I thought you passed the general's recommendation for Mr. Hamilton for the star.
I did, but not for first place. Oh, that was my cabinet's idea, and there's nothing I can do about it now. The general has a right to choose his staff, but I must say this is a great triumph for Mr. Hamilton.
Mm. Oh, I came out to tell you it's time for you to leave for your cabinet meeting.
No, is it? Well, I'd better hurry. This is an important one. I have to tell them what I've decided about John Freeze.
Was he sentenced?
Yes. The word just came. John Freeze has been sentenced to death for treason. Gentlemen of the cabinet, I intend to pardon John Freeze.
What?
Why, you can't mean that, Mr. President. Why, John Freeze is a convicted traitor.
I don't agree with you, Mr. McHenry.
But the man led a rebellion in Pennsylvania.
Yes, with a feather in his cap and his fife and drum corps wearing red, white, and blue cockades. Red, white, and blue, gentlemen. The colors of their country.
It was a rebellion no matter what colors they were wearing.
They marched as Americans in protest against attacks. If you'll recall, as Americans, we too once staged a rebellion in Boston Harbor in protest to attacks.
That was an entirely different matter, sir.
You mean to say, Mr. President, that Americans have the right to fight the tax collectors?
No, I do not. But this government is very new. We have to get our people used to the taxes and other things that go with government. It's our job to turn men like John Freeze into citizens. Gentlemen, let's not kill a good man because he didn't agree with the law we passed. Let's teach him why the law was necessary and get him on our side. I'm sure you must be able to see my point.
I agree with that at all.
Well, gentlemen of the cabinet, I'm sorry you don't agree with me. But John Freeze is going to be pardoned whether you agree or not.
Where are you?
I'm in here.
Well, I have news from France.
From Talleyrand?
Yes, the message came through Mr. Van Murray's at The Hague. He enclosed an official note from Talleyrand saying that if we would send a minister to France to straighten out the difficulties between our two countries, we would be received with all the respect due our country.
Oh, that's wonderful. Then there's hope for peace.
And Mr. Gerry has arrived back in this country with very much the same thoughts.
Are you going to call a cabinet meeting?
No. I've had numerous cabinet meetings on just the possibility of this taking place. My cabinet is completely under the domination of Mr. Hamilton. And Mr. Hamilton wants war. So I'm going to sidestep the cabinet completely. I'm going to send a message to the Senate announcing the appointment of a new minister to France.
Without consulting anyone?
Without consulting anyone.
Good for you. Who are you going to appoint?
Vance Murray. He seems to have the best contacts in France. I'm going to send a committee with him, but I won't announce that. I'll just send the Senate word of the appointment, and then we will hear from Mr. Hamilton and the cabinet.
Why, this is the most outrageous action that has ever been permitted in this country. How dare the president appoint a minister without consulting his cabinet?
It's absolutely unbelievable. Why, Mr. Hamilton would have conquered France. The president has ruined all chance of war.
The president's ruined the Federal Party. Why, our whole policy has been war with France. And now he's going to force peace on the country. It's betrayal, that's what it is, betrayal.
And the newspapers. Have you read the newspapers?
I certainly have.
The newspapers are all in favor of the president's act. There's nothing Mr. Hamilton or even Congress can do in the face of public opinion. We have got to have peace whether we want it or not.
Well, he certainly let his cabinet down. No matter how you look at it, he certainly let his cabinet down.
Mr. McHenry, I thought I might as well discuss this matter with you first, as taking the matter in alphabetical order, you come ahead of Mr. Pickering.
Yes, Mr. President?
As you know, the former president appointed you to my cabinet.
That's quite correct, sir.
This is a somewhat painful duty that I had hoped to avoid, but I've come to the conclusion that I cannot avoid it. To put it bluntly, Mr. McHenry, you and certain other members of my cabinet have repeatedly opposed my policies. You have constantly kept Mr. Hamilton informed of everything that went on in the cabinet meetings. I find I can no longer put up with these actions, and I must ask for your resignations at once.
You shall have my resignation in the morning, sir.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Pickering, but I must ask for your resignation.
I will not resign, sir. I refuse to go voluntarily.
Very well, Mr. Pickering. Then consider yourself dismissed.
I heard the wood chopping and I thought you were at it again.
No. I was just watching the hired man do it. You know, it's a good feeling not to have to do it yourself.
You don't think you'll be doing any more wood chopping?
No, I hope not. The situation is settled with France. I've made the new appointments to my cabinet and Mr. Hamilton has become very quiet. I don't think there'll be a war now. No, my dear, I hope that I won't be doing any more wood chopping for the balance of my administration. I even think you and I might find time to spend a few weeks in Quincy. You know, it's kind of nice to be president when the smoke of battle clears away. Well, I'm sure you figured out by now who the president was when all that happened, because it really did happen, you know. And you'll have the answer in just a moment.
Remember John Steinbeck's memorable drama of Mice and Men? That's the outstanding dramatic treat in store for you tonight when the curtain goes up on Theater Guild on the Air. And as the stars, you'll hear Burgess Meredith and June Havoc. Adapted by Steinbeck from his novel of the same name, Of Mice and Men tells the story of two migratory farm workers who dream of owning their own ranch. They manage to save enough money for the ranch when disaster overtakes them in the guise of a woman. Burgess Meredith will reenact the role of George, and Miss Havoc will be heard as the woman who brings chaos into his life. That's tonight, when Theater Guild will present Of Mice and Men over most of these same ABC stations. So be sure to listen. Now here again is Edward Arnold.
Is all this wood chopping.
Oh, hello, Mother.
Now, dear, we're thinking.
I'm very fond of these trees in Quincy. Couldn't you and John Quincy choose some other form of thinking?
My dear, you've been the wife of a president. How would you like to be the mother of one as well?
Well, I would naturally be very proud.
Well, John Quincy is going to remain in this country now, and I think he's going to have a very sound political career. He's a real chip off the old block.
Oh, I wish you'd keep your mind off chips and trees.
Being president is a mighty big dream, Father.
Well, you're your father's son, John. You can do it. And someday I should be very proud to say I'm the mother of President John Quincy Adams and the wife of President John Adams.
Yes, it was John Adams who had such trouble with the cabinet appointed by George Washington, and who wrote years later, "I desire no other inscription over my gravestone than here lies John Adams, who took upon himself the responsibility of the peace with France in the year 1800. Be with us again next week, won't you, for another exciting story that happened in Washington a few years ago to Mr. President. Goodbye.
Edward Arnold appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and can currently be seen in Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Technicolor musical, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, starring Frank Sinatra, Estra Williams, and Gene Kelly. Mr. President was created by Robert G. Jennings. It was produced and directed by William T. Johnson. Today's story by Gene Holloway was based on incidents in the life of President John Adams.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.